Hey everybody, welcome back to another week of the Damage Report. I swear we weren't just talking about Girl Scout cookies literally seconds ago. When I say we, I mean me, Johnny Rolla, and Brooke Donahue as well.
Hi, yes, it was about to start a fight. The music saved us.
She's on hashtag Team Samoa, and I am all the way thin mint. I don't even think that there's really a conversation to be had. And yet I'm starting a news show with that conversation.
Right.
So anyway, look, we've got a big week. We have a big show as well. So lots that we're gonna talk about through the course of this week. We're gonna be starting off breaking down some of the standout moments of Sunday's three different CNN town halls of Democratic primary contenders. We're gonna be breaking down a moment from each one of those. Let's see, man, Fox News had a weekend, damn. Jeanine Pirro with some incredibly Islamophobic comments over the weekend. And then Tucker Carlson, the target of a Media Matters investigation of some of the misogynistic things that he has said on guest appearances on a show. We're gonna be going down through those. In just a little bit, we're going to have a close family friend of the Stephon Clark's family to respond to, thus far, no justice whatsoever in terms of investigating and all of that in that totally needless death. And then vaccination. If you're a kid and your parents don't want to vaccinate you, should you do it yourself? We have a guest coming on to debate that a little bit later on in the show.
Also, you have facial hair. It's a good
I do,
week.
Everybody. Now you can calm down. I've grown slash drawn on a sufficient amount of facial covering.
It's a good week.
So, Everybody relaxed? We can go back. Can we go back to the news now, internet? No, I'm joking. I'll shave it again to piss you guys off later. Anyway, with that, why don't we jump into the weekend? So, CNN held three different hour-long town halls with different primary contenders on the Democratic side. The first was John Delaney, and I did a live commentary on the Young Turks YouTube channel for that. So if you want my full thoughts as it was going on, that video is now posted on the Young Turks channel on YouTube. But I did want to talk about one of his answers in particular, and it had to do with the Green New Deal. Does he support that sort of strategy for dealing with climate change? Here's what he said.
It is a time for bold solutions, but we also have to put our shoulder behind things that can actually get done. Because climate, Jake, is not like other issues, right? We have an infrastructure issue in this country. But if we wait 5 years to deal with our infrastructure, it's a missed opportunity, but it doesn't get exponentially worse. So we have to deal with climate change right away. Right? So what I'll do in my first year as president, get a bipartisan carbon tax bill passed in the Congress. That we can get done. That will reduce carbon emissions by 90%. Then what we have to do, as I said to the gentleman, put energy behind innovation and new strategies. We have to have a goal around climate that's realistic. We shouldn't be tying action on climate to universal healthcare, which I support, don't get me wrong, right? Or we shouldn't be tying action around climate to something like universal basic income, right? Which I actually don't support, right? If we actually think climate change is the existential issue of our time, then what we need to be doing is focusing on that and getting something done right away.
Okay, so we were talking about that particular video before the show, and you were a bit confused about what exactly he was trying to communicate, right?
Yeah, confusion is kind of where I lie in all of these videos you're about to see. But
let's start with this one.
The non-answer, kind of, sort of, essentially he says, I support it. I think the reasons behind it are important, but it'll never pass, so I'm not with it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think I don't even necessarily agree with that interpretation.
No?
I'm not sure that he really supports it. Both, I think you're right. I don't think that he thinks it will pass. But I also think, I don't think that he actually thinks it's the right approach. I mean, what's interesting, and it was part of our conversation earlier, is he keeps saying bold action.
Right.
We need bold action. It's an existential threat. He uses—
But not this bold action.
Exactly. Right. He uses all of like the code words that someone who takes this seriously would use.
Right.
It's a giant threat. Our response needs to be giant as well. So what do I want to do? Stuff that was like semi-radical in 2006, maybe. We're going to do some sort of like carbon market. Okay, I guess that's fine. We're going to do some subsidies. Again, like at least he's not one of the people, and I think that there are a few who are like, I am for the Green New Deal, and I want to push for very small change. He's at least admitting I don't support the Green New Deal, and I want to push for very little change while using all of the terminology that you have come to expect from someone who will do something bold. And here's the thing, you can't just say bold action over and over. At some point, there has to be boldness and action.
Right.
And I don't see that off of him.
I don't even see what he doesn't like about it. But that's why we both come away with this with different interpretations, because mm-hmm. he didn't really break anything down. Mm-hmm. He said what he would do, sort of, and we agree that he doesn't think it'll pass. Mm-hmm. But what are his like direct criticisms? What are the problems with it?
And I mean, I guess that philosophically, he doesn't think that making it a part of a broader range of issues that are all tied together is a good idea. So I think that AOC has done a great job of explaining why full employment, access to healthcare, you know, like racial justice, criminal mm-hmm. justice reform are tied in with dealing with climate change. He apparently thinks that we should deal with these things individually. I don't know that the recent experience of the last few Democratic presidents actually make that seem like a good strategy. I think that a more all-encompassing strategy makes more sense. The thing is, you have to put his response to this particular topic in the context of how he is campaigning. And bear in mind, he's been campaigning for about 2 years now. He says very specifically, I'm taking the middle road, the moderate road. I am not a radical. He does want to call himself a progressive because now everybody's calling themselves that. But he's not actually pitching himself as a leftist in any true sense of the word.
Right.
And so this response, I think, fits in very well with that. He also uses the word realistic a lot. I think that his response is an unrealistic path to take if you actually want to do something about climate change. So I don't think he's using the word accurately. And he also calls himself a pragmatic progressive. And I will just say this briefly. There was a line on Game of Thrones, and it's been used a lot in real life too, I guess. And it was, my dad told me that anything that comes before a but doesn't count for anything in a sentence. And I think that anything that comes after pragmatic in a self-identification of your political ideology doesn't really count for anything.
Oh, you
want to call yourself a pragmatic progressive. I guess from your point of view, you're pragmatic, but you lost a lot of the progressive stuff along the way. That was my impression after an hour of watching him.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so why don't we move on to the second section.
Okay.
So Representative Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii had a CNN town hall as well this weekend. She was asked about a lot of topics. One topic that came up, I believe it was Dana Bash who was asking the mm-hmm. questions. I apologize if I'm wrong there. Was about Ilhan Omar's comments about pro-Israeli lobbyists in the US. Now understand, this has already gone through a whole congressional resolution process for a week. There had been a week of discussion before that. And she was the only person who was asked about this out of three people that got town halls in the weekend. So I thought it was a weird question to ask, but she asked it, and here is what Tulsi Gabbard responded with.
Specific statements, were they anti-Semitic?
There are people who have expressed their offense at these statements. I think that what Congresswoman Omar was trying to get at was a deeper issue related to our foreign policy. And I think there's an important discussion that we have to be able to have openly, even though we may end up disagreeing at the end of it, that we've got to be able to have that openness to have the conversation.
But you're not willing to go as far
what
as
I'm
saying it's anti-Semitic.
Is what she was trying to bring up was something that was a deeper issue.
Okay.
And I don't believe that her intent was to cause any offense to anyone.
Okay, so both the question and then a follow-up, Dana Bash really wanted her to label it as anti-Semitic. So there you have Representative Gabbard defending Representative Omar, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, look, Tulsi Gabbard is a pretty religious person. She is being sensitive, I think, in not going even farther. Some people criticize this, saying she's not defending Representative Omar enough. A similar sort of criticism was lodged against AOC in some of her comments defending Omar. I think that it was a perfectly good defense that understood the context of what Representative Omar was trying to accomplish while also being sensitive to the community that was offended by it. So,
yeah.
I mean, look, she didn't go crazy radical in either direction, but I think that she stood up for herself and for Ilhan Omar.
I think so too. I don't know if I think Bash was trying to get her to say it was anti-Semitic as much as she was trying really hard to get her to answer a yes or no question
okay.
with yes or no, which is a frustration that we all have so often watching.
With politicians.
Yes. Like,
okay.
It was a simple question, and I understand why she wouldn't give it. Listen, regardless of how we feel, there is some bit of like inappropriateness for someone who is not Jewish telling mm-hmm. Jewish people what they should or shouldn't be offended by. And I think mm-hmm. the importance of this conversation. I mean, she apologized.
Well, I don't think she was saying that Tulsi Gabbard was saying they shouldn't be offended.
Right, but I think
she
that's why she didn't answer. I think that's why she didn't directly say, no, it's not.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I think.
Yeah, look, I
just
think.
Just trying not to.
It is a really sensitive topic.
And she apologized because
she did,
unintentionally,
yeah.
her words caused offense.
Exactly.
And so, you know, it is kind of inappropriate for someone who's not Jewish to say, no, it's absolutely not offensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and so I think she answered fine.
Yeah, what I'm hoping is, look, there's been some fallout from that set of comments. So Donald Trump, apparently in like a closed door thing with donors or something like that, was saying the Democrats are the anti-Jewish party right
now. Which is, I can't.
Which, like, I mean, look, we are not gonna relitigate all of what he has said and done. I will simply point out that I believe that there are 34 Jewish Americans that are elected in the US Congress right now. 32 of them are Democrats. So I will let you decide for yourself. Anyway, Donald Trump is on shaky ground, I will say.
Yeah.
I want to move to one more video. So South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, I believe I nailed that, I think, had a town hall with CNN. And he was asked a lot of stuff. I thought he had a pretty good performance, by the way. I'm not supporting him or anything, but he had a good performance. And he was asked one interesting question about Mike Pence, you know, from his neck of the woods. Would he prefer a Pence presidency to a Donald Trump presidency? Here's how he responded.
Oh. Does it have to be between
politics is about choices, man. You know that.
I mean, I don't know. It's really strange because I used to at least believe that he believed in our. I've disagreed with him ferociously on these things, but I thought, well, at least he believes in our institutions and he's not personally corrupt. But then. But then how could he get on board with this presidency? How could somebody who, you know, his interpretation of scripture is pretty different from mine to begin with. Okay, my understanding of scripture is that it is about protecting the stranger and the prisoner and the poor person and that idea of welcome. That's what I get in the gospel when I'm in church. And his has a lot more to do with sexuality and I don't know, a certain view of rectitude. But even if you buy into that, how could he allow himself to become the cheerleader of the porn star presidency? Is it that he stopped believing in scripture when he started believing in Donald Trump? I don't know.
Okay, so the porn star presidency thing is like sort of a slogan he's throwing out there.
I
personally would prefer to talk about this topic in a way that doesn't in any way stigmatize adult film stars, but I don't think he's trying to do that. So overall, I thought that was a funny response. His facial expressions when he was initially asked looked like he was just like, oh my God.
It was a
funny. I think we can all sympathize with.
Response, but I do think like I take away from like all three of their performances in general that in this day and age that we're in, whether you like it or not, where a celebrity, a reality TV star is the president of the United States, when you have zero name recognition mm-hmm. to anyone outside of like the town that you run or this your state, you have to be very direct and very clear and very strong with like where you stand. You have to be very honest. And no one doesn't have an answer to that question. Personally, everyone has an answer to that question. Whether I agree with it or not, everyone has an answer to that question, just what their opinion is. Mm-hmm. I don't think someone who is a politician doesn't have an answer. I just don't believe that. And so I don't think I don't think that that's honest.
Yeah, he could have been more direct.
So you should be, if you're trying to compete, when there are superstars basically in the race, when you're trying to compete, like I think you have to have more. You can't be kind of a timid, I don't want to say too much. You don't get that privilege because.
Yeah. I mean, look,
you've got to make waves.
Overall, I thought his I have not listened to him speak for an hour at a time ever in my life. That was the first time. I thought he had a good performance. He has an impressive resume. He's been the mayor of a town since he was 31, I think.
But first thing you said was, I mean, I'm not supporting him.
Well, not yet. I'm keeping a relatively open mind, but obviously, I'm not going to lie. I have no preference.
No,
ridiculous. I have a preference.
To shift you.
Yes, it's going to take a lot.
Yeah.
Exactly. And understand, I believe that in the most recent poll, all three of those who had town halls last night in early voting states in the primary, all three are polling at 0% right now. So all three, like in this crowded field, if you are going to make up that how much you're behind, you need to come out with bold statements, bold policies, bold action.
Bold solutions to your campaign, okay?
And look, the thing is, these polls haven't factored in these town halls. So it's possible that people will have been swayed by these three. We'll have to see that. That's why we're trying to spotlight all three of them. But anyway, I thought it was a funny response, if not a very direct response,
like we would have preferred.
Okay, with that, we are going to take a break. We come back. We've got an update on the Stephon Clark I was going to say that the investigation, but I guess they're doing their damnedest to make sure that there is no investigation. So we'll be talking about that after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us now to respond to recent developments into the ongoing investigation and search for justice in the case of Stephon Clark is a close family friend of the Clark family, Jamelia Land. Jamelia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So there's been quite a bit happening in the past couple of weeks in this area, starting with the announcing just less than 2 weeks ago that the DA said that there would be no charges for the police officers who were directly involved in the tragic killing of Stephon. When you initially heard that, how did you feel? How did the family react?
Well, it was not really a shock and a surprise. Traditionally, this is what happens when we have these types of killings. So though we were gravely disappointed, we were not surprised.
So as you've been following, before the announcement, as you've been following this, there's the investigation, you know, the DA is obviously having a big influence on that. How have you evaluated, I guess, the honest desire for truth in this case from the point of view of the DA and others investigating?
Well, what the district attorney here did was she engaged in a smear campaign. She tried to make it sound as though Stephon was committing suicide by cop, which is untrue. It's been very disheartening. I don't believe that getting to the truth of what has happened here was in fact her intention. The intention has been, like so many other times, when the victim of these types of situations is Black, oftentimes they are dehumanized and they are criminalized. And so, again, I was not surprised, yet I was absolutely shocked and appalled at the depth of which she engaged in her smear campaign.
And we've been waiting to hear what, you know, the Department of Justice might do. Supposedly there's going to be a civil rights investigation. California more generally apparently is not going to take any big action. So I'm curious at this point, how is the family holding up? Is there hope that there might be some justice at this point?
Well, there is definitely hope that there will be some justice, and I am adamant about ensuring that not just we as a family, but as a community actually get that. We are focused more on getting AB 392 passed. AB 392 was birthed out of Stephon's murder. It is the California Act to Save Lives, which will deal with the use of deadly force for police departments throughout the state of California. As progressive and a liberal state as we have been touted to be, California has some of the highest numbers when it comes to police murder. For example, Kern County has been deemed the number one city in the state, excuse me, in the country for police murders. So what we're looking to do is get the legislative bill AB 392 passed. It will not bring back Stefan. It will not give us justice for the officers that have taken his life. However, we are hoping that it will prevent other families in the future from having to experience this type of pain and tragedy.
Jamelia, I have a question about just maybe like your history of activism in the Sacramento community, because I'm noticing the flag behind you. And I know that even before the loss of your close family friend, you call him a nephew, you were involved in the community, right?
Correct. I started off, I've been an activist all of my life. Both of my parents were members of the Black Panther Party. And so it's just kind of in my blood. But I started fighting a couple of years ago to get a bill, SB 1437, passed, which deals with California's felony murder law. We were successful in getting it signed off by the governor last October, and it went into effect January 1st of this year. I started championing for a change in California's felony murder rule after my son, Elijah Johnson, was wrongfully convicted of a triple homicide that he did not commit.
Wow. So the bill that you were talking about previously, if people living in the area are interested in helping to see that get passed, what can they do to help in the effort?
Well, I am encouraging everyone. Thank you for asking. We have put up a website. It is www.justiceforcalifornia.org. Again, that's www.justiceforcalifornia.org, where you can go, you can learn additional information about the bill and ways that you are able to actually help us here in California be able to get this bill passed. If we are successful, or should I say when we are successful in getting this bill passed, I am hopeful that we will be able to set a template for the remainder of the country, where hopefully we will be able to get a federal legislative piece intact to deal with some of these types of killings.
I had one more question for you as well. I know that as we're right around the anniversary right now in Sacramento, people have been protesting and organizing. Can you just tell us a little bit about the current state of the sort of popular uprising against what's been happening in California?
Well, it is reminding me of the civil rights movement. We have the young adults that are within Stefan's age range that have uprised throughout the community. Just the night before last, over 150 protesters actually came to the family home. Grandma allowed them to come into the backyard. There was a moment of silence. We've had children throughout the city marching out, crying out for justice in the name of Stefan. I have organized a march, No Power, No Peace. It will be held this upcoming Thursday, March 14th, starting at 10:30 a.m. Well, we will march from Rayleigh Field downtown to the state capitol, where we will be pushing for AB 392. What I'm hopeful that will come out of this, very specifically in the African American and the Latino communities, is that we not only champion for this bill, but we begin to engage the youth in their civic duty and responsibility. In the state of California, for example, you can pre-register to vote at the age of 16. Many of our youth in our inner cities do not know this, but they do know what it is like to be 16 and have more RIP t-shirts than they do homecoming and prom pictures. And so we are hoping to engage the youth in their civic duty and responsibility and be able to really bring awareness to what is happening, because these killings are occurring every day in this country. And we continue to get these types of responses from the district attorney, the attorney generals, and we're just tired. We've had absolutely enough. So we are definitely seeking to get AB 392 passed and hopefully, like I said, a federal legislative piece down the line.
Jamelia Land, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, lots more to get to. Okay, so we're reaching the close of like 2 weeks of criticism / attacks of Representative Ilhan Omar for her comments, pretty much from everybody, from the right, from Democrats as well. Judge Jeanine Pirro of Fox News decided, though, she's going to take the cake and attack not only Representative Omar, but literally every single Muslim in the world. Here is what she had to say on the topic.
This is not who your party is. Your party is not anti-Israel. She is. Think about this. She's not getting this anti-Israel sentiment doctrine from the Democrat Party. So if it's not rooted in the party, where is she getting it from? Think about it. Omar wears a hijab, which according to the Quran 33:59, tells women to cover so they won't get molested. Is her adherence to this Islamic doctrine indicative of her adherence to Sharia law, which in itself is antithetical to the United States Constitution?
Okay, my brain is bleeding. That is the most I've watched of her show in one sitting, and I'm going to throw up. But let's just play a quick hypothetical game.
Okay.
Steve King's white supremacy doesn't come from the Republican Party, so ask yourself, where does it come from?
Also, what's like repeatedly frustrating is them. Sharia law isn't actually a law. Mm-hmm. It's like a set of like moral codes that many different people who happen to be Muslim follow in many different ways. Mm-hmm. But it's not a law.
Yeah. Well, she's a judge, so she thinks of things in terms of laws and not laws, I guess.
She just thinks of things wrong?
Yeah. Yes.
And I think
she does.
But it's like so important to continuously point out, because this goes back to the conversations we always have about like institutional racism and systemic racism and issues in this country. This woman was a district attorney in the state of New York. She was a judge in a courtroom.
That's
like
crazy.
Actually practicing. This woman who has these beliefs.
Yeah.
And who, like this woman.
I know. Look, so.
Was hiding all of this under.
Or maybe not hiding.
Exactly. If we take a look back at it. That actually would be quite interesting.
Go back through some of her rulings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was incredibly offensive. Look, all she said was she hates Jewish people because she's a Muslim. That's what she said.
Right.
She can try to gussy it up a little bit, but that's what she's saying. She further went on to say, and this is just a complete lie, on Ilhan Omar, her comments only critical of Jews in Israel, not Italy, not Morocco, not North Korea, Israel. 100% untrue.
Right.
She's criticized any number of other countries. She criticizes Saudi Arabia every 45 minutes, and justifiably so. But just lie. It makes your case a little bit better. By the way, like I said, this is the most I've watched of her show, and I've found that it's watching her show is a bit of a race to find out whether you will fall asleep before you go insane. But one of those two things is gonna happen. You're not gonna make it through. So what's interesting is that she has been criticized, actually from all sides, but not equally. So Hafsa Kamal, who works at Fox News and is a Muslim, tweeted to her, "At Judge Janine, can you stop spreading this false narrative that somehow Muslims hate America or women who wear a hijab aren't American enough? You have Muslims working at the same network you do, including myself, Kay, thanks." So I love that the criticism is coming from inside the network, and understandably. Now, Fox News actually, I guess, denounced her to some extent, which they do not normally do, saying, "We strongly condemn Jeanine Pirro's comments about Representative Ilhan Omar. They do not reflect those of the network, and we've addressed the matter with her directly." Thank you for doing that. They totally do represent Fox News, but usually they're a little bit more. They hide it a little bit better. So look, they criticized her. That's good. That's progress,
yeah,
I guess.
It happened. A broken clock is right twice a day.
Exactly. But not twice a show, it turns out. Because she responded saying she didn't apologize, saying the intention of her comments, quote, was to ask a question and start a debate. What debate are you trying to start with that?
Right.
Again, whether you will fall asleep or go insane. I guess that's the only debate. Of course, because one is Muslim does not mean you don't support the Constitution, except you were very much implying that. Quote, "I invite Representative Omar to come on my show anytime to discuss all the important issues facing America today."
And be abused, like for your ratings? No.
She apparently thinks, I didn't know this. We try to book people and there's people we can't get on the show. I didn't know you're supposed to insult them and their religion, then they'll come on your show.
Right.
That's apparently what Fox News thinks. They really do. Man,
this whole like
the
debate
incentives
me.
Are so
like,
sick.
Go
exactly,
away.
The debate me bro culture is so sick and fake. We're gonna get to Tucker Carlson in a little bit on how fake it actually is.
Right.
They say debate me, but don't actually debate me. Not strongly. Don't reveal who I am. Anyway, Jeanine Pirro, absolutely disgusting. This could well be another of her attempts to get a job in the Trump administration. We know that she wants that really badly. But this is disgusting stuff. This is. you should lose sponsor stuff to say that if you are American and you are a Muslim, your loyalty to our country is fundamentally, we don't know. We can't necessarily assure it. It is, if you have a problem with Ilhan Omar's dual loyalties comment, you should hate this at least as much. Because she is not just saying lobbyists are potentially have a problem or politicians potentially have a problem. She's saying Muslims potentially have a problem. That's what Jeanine Pirro is saying. So absolutely sick.
There's an interesting Twitter thread, and I will tweet it, I'll retweet it or something, but about the history of like kind of how this conversation is kind of like the new version of what happened decades ago with Catholicism and how actual presidential candidates had to denounce this idea of their, you know, their religion be like holding them back from supporting the Constitution.
Yeah, isn't that crazy that
it's
they were
weird,
like,
right?
Will Kennedy just be handing over power to the Pope? Really? Wow, man. And it's like when I think back to like, you know, 100 years ago when like Italians were like super suspect. People were like, can they ever integrate? Really? Wow. Thankfully, we've moved past some of that. Yeah. We still got huge problems,
still got a lot
obviously.
To go, a lot,
we
got long huge way to
problems
go, right.
And new problems, but
speaking
thankfully,
of problems,
you can be Catholic. Exactly. Let's turn to this now. Tucker Carlson was a many times guest on the Bubba the Love Sponge show. I'm not really familiar with
Thank
it.
Thank goodness you're not.
I'm not. But he was on it a lot. Anyway, Media Matters went back through it and found that he had a history of saying some controversial stuff. Here is some of what they found.
Well, actually, he's not in prison for that. Warren Jeff didn't marry underage girls.
No, he's in prison for facilitation of child rape.
Whatever the hell that means. She just does seem a little... Yeah, I mean, you said it. I'm just agreeing with you. I love women, but they're extremely primitive. They're basic. They're not that hard to understand. You know what, in my brief experience, you know what gets women going is arguing with them.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not, Brent, I never use them.
It's true. You debate politics with a woman and just go, you know, just full blown out there, especially feminism. If you're talking to a feminist and she's giving you, men really need to be more sensitive and this. You know, actually, men don't need to be more sensitive. You just need to be quiet and kind of do what you're told.
And lighten up a little bit, bitch.
They love it.
I feel sorry for unattractive women. I mean, there's nothing they did.
Anybody who answers my trophy wife is my favorite possession is my hero. I don't give a shit. I'm voting for the guy.
You want to Sarah Palin.
There is that. I'll agree with that.
Okay, so look, there's way more. You can go to Media Matters. He doesn't like that this was spread.
There is way more.
There's a lot more. And so he pulled very much a Bill O'Reilly sort of thing, where Bill O'Reilly, he just like segments of what Bill O'Reilly would say would be put on Media Matters for literally years, and he would attack them, saying that it's propaganda. It's like, dude, it's you. There's no commentary added. They don't add any commentary. It is literally just what they say, and they hate it. So he said, Media Matters caught me saying something naughty, like about how child brides aren't that bad. Rather than express the usual ritual contrition, how about this? I'm on television every weeknight, live for an hour. If you want to know what I think, you can watch. Anyone who disagrees with my views is welcome to come on and explain why. Again, being an a-hole is not a booking strategy.
Right.
And you can't just like whitewash every horrible position that you have and every horrible thing that you've said, saying, oh, well, that's all the more reason you should watch me. And what's interesting is that he says anybody who disagrees could come on, but Rutger Bregman, who you might remember was asked to come on and then disagreed with him, and so they never aired the interview, said, anyone who disagrees with my views is welcome to come on and explain why. Just make sure to make your own recording. That is a good response.
Also, I just had to double check like how old he is. And so this would have been a 39-year-old man calling in to a radio show to make jokes about child rape.
Yeah.
This is bizarre.
Yeah, and look, the thing is, I understand what he'll say, and I understand what a lot of people will say. Hey, it was still a long time ago or whatever. That's fine.
That's really well up there in like age.
Yeah,
he
wasn't
old
10.
Age, but you're an adult in adulthood. Like, right, he wasn't 22.
I agree. I'm just saying that there are some people who will say that. But the thing is, like we just had Parker Malloy of Media Matters on I think it was Friday to talk about some of his most recent comments, like that the issues with men in terms of suicide and stuff are the result of women working, and so they shouldn't work. So the thing is, like I'm willing, like, okay, this is from 8 years ago or 10 years ago. Watch his show now. It is every bit as misogynistic, every bit as condescending, every bit as horrible as he was when he was calling into the Bubba the Love Sponge show or whatever. Except now there's a lot more out and out white supremacy, white nationalism, and all of that. Islamophobia. You can get all of that watching his show. You shouldn't, by the way.
Right.
Don't give him the ratings. But this is not like something that he has moved past. This is something that he has added a little bit of, like a gossamer sheen of plausible deniability. But all of the antisocial views that were expressed on that show, that is front and center. That is why he has viewers today, is because they know that they will hear the same sort of stuff. They want to feel male superiority, white superiority, and they know that Tucker Carlson will deliver that to them.
Yeah, and listen, you know, every time you choose to go on his show, talk to him, interact with him, and like help his show's ratings, debate with him, you help push this narrative forward, whether you like it or not. I saw, like, you know, someone saying, I've been fine going on your show. I'll never do it again after this. You should not have been okay with it.
Yeah. Anyway, great job by Media Matters in digging that up. Yeah. We'll see if Fox News says anything. I mean, they just got on Jeanine Pirro.
I think
we'll
they've hit their max, right?
Yeah, I think one per year is probably all we get. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. We come back, more to Guess Who. So you might have heard recently in the news that over the past 10 years, maybe longer, more and more Americans in certain parts of the country are choosing not to vaccinate their kids. Also, kids are starting to get once eradicated diseases, totally separated.
Also, these are not connected.
Exactly. Right. Measles is totally back. You just worry about it. Anyway, joining us now to talk about this and whether kids should choose, like some have recently, to vaccinate themselves against their parents' wishes, Michael Dougherty, CEO of the Cyber Education Foundation and founder of the Justice Society. Michael, welcome back to the Damage Report.
Oh, good to be here. How are you, sir?
Good to have you here to talk about a totally non-controversial topic like vaccination. So recently there was, I believe, congressional testimony from a kid. I think he was a teen.
He was a teenager.
Yes, who chose to vaccinate himself against his parents' wishes. Is this something that they can legally do? Is this something that is becoming more common? What do you think about this topic?
Well, okay, so as on background, I was in medicine for 30 years and a CEO of a medical laboratory. So I have some strong opinions about this, and is that you don't have the right to contaminate my child or my friends because you have a political opinion about a scientific fact. So I actually think that it needs to get a little bit earlier than that, and I really have a problem with the parents that choose to not vaccinate their children and risk others they don't know. And if you make that choice, I think you need to be responsible for that choice when it infects others. So I have a real problem with politics politicizing the sciences. And we get into trouble all over the place because now we're into, does a kid have a right to be vaccinated when his parents say he doesn't? I think the question is, does a child have a right to be in a public school setting when he can contaminate people because his parents decide to make a choice that they probably don't have any real authority to make?
So I'm curious, I have a question, because now we've gotten to a point where almost every state allows minors to consent to their own reproductive health care. So is it even feasible that vaccinations could go in that direction as well, and that children everywhere could be able to consent to their own, you know, safety in that realm?
Well, I think the debate is different because you remove the debate about a fetus being a living being or not. This is your health, but you would be infecting others. And I think that has to be really clear. There are people that go, well, I got sick from the flu shot, or I got sick from something. Well, life is unfair. And we all do get sick and people do die. And that's no one's fault. But the bigger picture and the bigger societal impact is so clear. That unless you're off into conspiracy theory land, and if you want to go there in science, then bring me the scientific evidence. I think that we are at a point where these children should have the right. I mean, you don't give your rights up across the board to be a healthy human being just because you're under 18.
I did want to ask you a question that I think could be important for people who don't have the background in medicine that you have. So the concept of herd immunity and how it applies to vaccinations and these diseases coming back, could you explain that for the audience?
Well, so, you know, you have to isolate the disease so it can't replicate. Okay, so you have a multiplier effect, a spread effect. I don't know. Let's just make everyone pretend you're all a petri dish, right? And as you remove it from the population, it's then the population as a whole gets rid of the disease. If I am a parent and I have what I consider to be a politicized scientific opinion, not a fact. And therefore, I want to put my opinion, meaning that disease we got rid of, back in the population, back in the herd, because I have an opinion. I'm responsible for that. I'm responsible for contaminating everybody else, not just this is my right as an individual, because disease doesn't stay in one little compartment. This isn't a political point of view that we are all individually allowed to have. So people that know my politics might be shocked by what I'm saying here, but I will tell you, it's not okay with me. And what, you don't have the right to speak for the entire herd, the entire crowd, because of your politicized scientific opinion.
Well, Michael, I wish that we had more time. Unfortunately, we're right up against the limit. But thank you so much for joining us and breaking both the science down, but also the implications if people make that choice. Michael Dougherty, CEO of the Cyber Education Foundation and founder of the Justice Society. Thank you again.
Good to be here. Thanks.
We're going to take a short break. We only have a few minutes left. We're going to cover one more quick topic on the other side. So the mental health of our president continues to decline on a daily basis, and people have joked a little bit about it, and that has clearly gotten under his skin, because Donald Trump, who just a few days ago called Tim Cook of Apple, a well-known corporation, called him Tim Apple, he's been mocked because of that. At a closed-door donor event, he apparently told them that he had not said that. He said Tim Cook Apple really fast. So first of all, let's evaluate, is that true? Did he say Tim Cook Apple really fast? Here's the video.
Put a big investment in our country. We appreciate it very much, Tim Apple. But we're opening it up.
Nope, you didn't. You didn't say Tim Cook Apple really fast. Okay, so that was obviously untrue because it's on tape. So he moved to explanation two, which was this. At a recent roundtable meeting of business executives, and long after formally announcing Tim Cook of Apple, I quickly referred to Tim plus Apple as Tim slash Apple as an easy way to save time and words. The fake news was disparagingly all over this, and it became yet another bad Trump story.
So goofy.
And so that has led me to a new conclusion that we do, as is often said on Twitter, live in the worst timeline ever.
This is so goofy. This is how you save people in your phone when you first meet them and you're not, like, it's like John TYT. One time a friend, I learned like a year into our friendship, he still had me saved in his phone as Brooke GroupMe. Because that's how we met in a groupie.
Oh. Like, yeah, we have to check his phone for its like Stormy booty call or something.
Trump broke. Like, yeah. What would you do? You know?
Exactly. I wonder what our Trump names would be. I don't know. So here's the thing, though. Like, that's all fun and games. Ha ha. Our president isn't mentally competent and he has the nuclear codes.
But it's your president lying to you blatantly.
He's also
again,
lying.
Right?
Like, dude, you made a mistake. Like, you should be able to admit it. And I get that it's hard to admit embarrassing things that you've done. So I'm going to admit something. This is really embarrassing. I'm not the only person this has happened to. Once in, I think, sixth grade, this is so embarrassing. I was working on a problem in the back of the room, and I said, and I needed help. So I said, hey, mom. And they did not forget about that for literally years, because it was not my mom, it was the teacher, but I said, hey, mom. I did that. I didn't say, hey, teacher, get my mom. I didn't say it super fast, and I didn't say it to save time. I just said it.
You just said it.
So he should be willing to do that. And the thing is, it's obviously not true. He's done this before. He said this at one point. We have some of our great business leaders, and leaders, period, right behind me. I may ask Marilyn Lockheed, the leading women's business executive of the country, according to many. Perhaps. But according to many, her name is actually Marilyn Houston, and she is the CEO of Lockheed Martin. Her name is not Mary Lockheed.
Do you think this is like the spawn of the mnemonic devices his handlers are giving him, you know, so that he, like, okay, Tim,
maybe.
Apple, Tim, Apple, Tim, Apple.
Baby.
Apple is a corporation. Tim, Apple.
Apple,
Tim. Maryland, Lockheed. Okay, let me tell you what Lockheed, like, do you know what I mean? Do you think this
I think that is a very reasonable explanation. And
Tim,
just
Apple, Tim,
admit
Apple,
it.
Tim, Apple.
Exactly. What company does he work for? Apple. By the way, you should know who Tim Cook is anyway. You're the president.
But
you're a businessman.
You know, we're beyond that, though.
But that's fine. Anyway,
right.
I like that explanation. And he just can't admit it. I like that more than that his brain is melting out of his ears on a daily basis and he holds the ability to start a nuclear apocalypse. I like your explanation better.
Tim Apple,
anyway,
Tim Apple.
It's just sad.
It's so ridiculous.
It's just sad, baby. Ugh. Anyway, okay, that's all we have time for today. I wish I could read some of the awesome reviews you guys have given to the podcast on iTunes. If you haven't done that yet, please go rate and review the podcast. Give it 5 stars, write a little text review about what you like about the show, why you listen to it, and it'll be read on a future episode of the show. We really appreciate that. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Brooke, as
Thanks
always.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here every day now. And thank you for watching. We'll be back tomorrow with much more.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.